From Entrepreneur Media, this is Problem Solvers, a show in which entrepreneurs do what entrepreneurs do best, solve unexpected problems in their business.
We were completely wrong.
And I'm just like, it's not selling.
It was like, we have to start from scratch.
I'm Jason Pfeiffer, the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine.
If you know the name Orange Theory, you probably know it as the fitness brand that's everywhere. And there's a good reason for that. It is everywhere.
Yeah, it's an exciting week because we're going to cross 1,200 locations globally in a couple weeks. And we crossed 1,000 locations in the U.S. a couple weeks ago, and we've never closed a location in the U.S.
So like I said, everywhere. That's Orange Theory's CEO and co-founder, by the way. His name is David Long, though you could call him basically whatever you want.
I go by David, Dave, and DL.
DL because there are so many other Daves in the office. Anyway, let's get back to that big number. 1,200 locations. Huge. So much growth. That exciting week, by the way, was back in March. That's when we talked. And that's all happened in only 9 years. And when we see brands expand that rapidly, I think our tendency is to think, wow, they just nailed it. They had the right idea at the right time, and the thing just took off like a rocket ship. But that's not usually the story. It's not the real story. The real story sounds like this.
12 to 18 months into our very first phase of franchising and having a couple more corporate-owned locations, we were just alarmed and just questioning whether or not we could really scale this brand.
That's more like it. When Orange Theory first began expanding in the year 2010, everything was a mess. Locations weren't earning what they should, customer satisfaction was low, and the product itself was just all over the place. Dave and his founding team had no idea they'd ever be able to grow this thing into such a gigantic brand. Hell, they weren't sure they were going to be able to survive as a company at all.
You know, as fast-paced as we are today and as many big decisions that impact a lot of people that we make today, that was definitely the most stressful time and one of the most hardest working times for everybody involved in the brand, because it was kind of like go or no go. Like if we couldn't get that figured out and start growing those units, then there was no great future growth for the brand, as you can imagine.
So how did they get past it? How did they identify what was wrong with that initial expansion and then fix the problems and turn Orange Theory into a growth machine? That is the story we're going to explore in Problem Solvers today, because Orange Theory is a great tale of how to catch and fix mistakes early and how to really make sure that your brand is ready for the big time. It is Brand Expansion 101, and we'll get into it all right after the break. If you want to take risks and solve problems, you need insurance that can protect you along the way. That's what Hiscox specializes in. Hiscox is the business insurance expert and knows that every business is as unique as a fingerprint or a barcode. That's why it tailors intelligent solutions to fit every business's specific needs and, as a result, leaves entrepreneurs feeling well protected. Its customer service has a 97% rating. Get a quote or purchase a policy at hiscox.com. That is HISCOX.com. HISCOX.com. All right, we're back. So first, where did Orange Theory come from? The answer is it came from a combination of two things, a great workout concept and someone who really understood the industry, or at least the potential of the industry. But those things didn't come together immediately. So let's start with Dave. Dave was always interested in the wellness industry. He'd worked at a general nutrition center during high school and college, and then at some traditional big box health club chains after college. And he saw an opportunity here. No matter how many health clubs were built, he felt like there was a big white space for what he calls a results-based product that also appeals to a broad demographic. Those are his words. I'll put it in a different way. It's a fitness program about looking and feeling better and catering to a very wide audience. Then one day, Dave and his business partner hear about a local South Florida woman named Ellen Latham, who's teaching these classes that have become popular. They were called the Ultimate Workout. So Dave and his partner sign up to see what it's all about.
We went and took the workout, and we saw how great the workout was in its raw form, and also the varied demographic of people that were taking the workout and getting results.
Dave starts thinking, hey, maybe this is it. He could partner with Ellen and grow what she's doing into a national franchise brand. So he makes the pitch to Ellen, she's into it, and they decide to give it a shot. In March of 2010, they make it official by opening a pilot location in Fort Lauderdale. Now, they do something really interesting at the start here. Ellen is a local fitness star, but they very intentionally don't associate this new brand with her. They don't want it named after her, and they don't want her running or teaching classes in this pilot location. And they don't really even want her promoting it.
We didn't want her to drive it through her network and or through her being in the studio herself.
And you might think, wait a second, isn't that like throwing your greatest asset in the trash? Why would you do that? But the answer here is really smart. Dave wanted to avoid what he calls the Ellen effect, which is to say that people would sign up because it's Ellen. That's good for a local business, but it doesn't scale very well. You can't make a 1,200 location franchise business that's dependent upon one person's celebrity because, I mean, that person can't possibly be in all locations at once. So if this new fitness company wanted to go big, it had to create something that scaled. That meant Ellen played a big role in developing the program and even hiring the initial coaches, but publicly she stayed in the background. No Ellen effect. Instead, they gave it a new name that had nothing to do with her. Orange Theory. And now it was time to grow.
We got that location open, and then a number of things happened the next kind of 18 months, call it. We opened two more locations that were founder-owned. They weren't owned by they weren't traditional corporate locations, but they weren't franchised either. So we opened one in Palm Beach area, and we also opened one out in Scottsdale. So we started to spread the geography. And then at the same time, we also started a franchise and opened a handful of franchise locations. And you know, what we noticed very quickly was most of the locations that we opened, including the founder-owned outside of that pilot, we just weren't getting the same traction in the opening, and we weren't happy with the level of the customer experience, as well as obviously just the volume of the four-wall numbers being driven.
Okay, let's break that down because we have now entered the company's expansion problem. Orange Theory opens one location. Then, within 18 months, it has opened a bunch more, and something is not clicking. The new locations are not doing as well as the original one. People aren't as happy, and they're not spending as much money. Something is just wrong. But what? Orange Theory had done itself a big favor here in that it had started surveying and doing net promoter scores very early on, so it had customer feedback and data to look at. And one of the big things that people were saying was, Orange Theory is just hard.
Some of the workouts were just too advanced for the audience.
Now, Orange Theory was supposed to have an answer to this. They'd created fitness classes with all sorts of modifications that local coaches could use to adapt a class to anyone's abilities. But somehow that wasn't happening. Dave and the team looked into it and realized, the coaches at these different locations were all approaching the classes in totally different ways. Some were even making up their own workouts.
So you can imagine a different personality or drive of a coach could drive a consumer away from the brand because it was just perceived or was just actually too hard in the beginning or too complex.
So, okay, that's a problem that needs solving. The coaches are all running their classes differently, which effectively eliminates the point of having a fitness franchise. I mean, if you walk into two Orange Theories and get two different workouts, then Orange Theory doesn't mean very much, does it? And so the next question was, why is this happening?
I think it was really over the course of probably a month of digging into the training, you know, the training system that we had built to date, both, you know, what happens before the studio opens and what we call pre-sales, as well as the launch training, which is that, you know, that blast of training to get that initial franchisee or corporate owner along with their staff trained up so they could operate the studio when it opens. And then even what is the ongoing training modules? So we analyzed all of that over a course of a few weeks and realized that we came to a few conclusions. We needed more training pre-launch, more training during launch, and additional touch points so that whether it be a franchise-owned store or not, so there needed to be more touch points and more period of time to get the content and the kind of the essence of the brand across. And then we needed just more detail, more layers down in the actual training materials.
Orange Theory had built a system and taught that system to its new location owners, but was now realizing that the system they built just didn't properly communicate what it needed to. I mean, it was like headquarters was telling coaches, hey, here are some guidelines, go do your own thing, which is, of course, not how a strong brand is built. Orange Theory knew that it needed to solve all of this before expanding further, so the company put a halt to expansion. It wanted to rethink everything before opening a single new location. Now, this is an interesting situation, isn't it? And it makes total sense. I mean, what we've got here is a communications breakdown. And yet, I mean, it shouldn't be shocking. This is Business 101 stuff here. If you're going to expand, you have to define what you are and build a system that replicates itself, a system that grows you. And so I asked Dave, how did they get that wrong? How did they overlook it?
I think it's a couple things. I think one, we underestimated the complexity of the business and just the level of depth of both documenting how to do it right, as well as spending the amount of time and reps with the appropriate team members at these field studios to get it right. And then I think the other piece was we were in the mix of having a really successful, pilot studio and then starting to franchise. And I think at the time we felt like we were doing a really good job documenting everything and building out a training program that in that moment it felt like it was enough. But I think, part of what we realized later is that there were still a lot of the things that we were figuring out in flight. And so I think we documented and say an initial round of the training system, let's just call it. But then a month later or 2 months later or even a week later, we're continuing to learn about the business and pick up more insights. And so it's a matter of, the plane's kind of in the air. We're learning how to fly it better and how to improve the customer experience. But that stuff was happening real time, and it wasn't necessarily all translating to the training system in real time or even the staff that we had that was administering a lot of the training.
In other words, they expanded before they understood what made Orange Theory Orange Theory. They didn't really understand their business, what made it work, or how to train people to run it. And this is a valuable lesson for anyone, I think. You may feel like you've got a great business, but do you understand it 100%? Do you really? Or are you learning? And if you're learning, well, maybe it's best to make sure that you do truly understand your recipe for success before you start doubling the batch. So to fix its problems, Orange Theory split the process into two categories. The first is fitness programming, and the second is learning and development. Fitness programming was actually pretty straightforward. They'd given coaches too much flexibility, and it was now time to centralize all programming at Orange Theory HQ. Ellen took control of this one. The company hired more people into the fitness department and developed a large slate of great workouts. Then they began rolling it out, even before they'd improved the system by which to train these coaches, because they just wanted to get people excited.
We kind of soft launched that to show the amazing content that the coaches could just use each day.
Then it was time to go on to learning and development, which was about more than just teaching. It was about the right kind of team building that made the teaching possible.
And so that was a matter of, compiling the training materials and the foundational things that we identified were missing, and making sure that we had the right subject matter experts to obviously lead the, document and lead the training, but also so much of it is about getting buy-in from the right parties, whether it be field employees, whether it be franchisees or their management. And so making sure that when we looked at it holistically, all the areas that needed to be addressed, we had subject matter experts ready to come in and do the training and influence the folks that needed to buy in and make these adjustments and make these bigger commitments into operational excellence.
There were some quick fixes to start. I mean, they began hosting training webinars around sales and operations. And then to really solidify the fitness stuff and make everybody click, Orange Theory brought together everybody for an in-person training to run through all the programs together. About 30 people showed up for that first one. And this was really smart because these changes I'm talking about, well, I mean, they may sound smart from a business perspective, but let's not forget that they might not be welcome from a coaching perspective. Every fitness coach at each one of these new locations had a bit of a different style, as we talked about, and they didn't necessarily appreciate losing control of that. Some of them quite liked the flexibility they found at Orange Theory, which was now going to go away with this centralization of content and training. So while Orange Theory had everybody together at one training, they decided to focus on showing coaches what they had to gain rather than dwell on what they had to lose.
Instead of focusing on what some of them were really upset about losing the ability to create their own program, we focused on giving them really good tools of how to command the room, how to manage the class better, how to connect with the members better. And so we really focused on all these other things that they really needed to focus on to be successful. And that's how we built momentum in that area.
And here's one other way that Orange Theory began convincing people that this change was for the better. They kept showcasing the success of that very first Orange Theory, the pilot, which is the one that the company had the most control over.
during all this, our very first location just continued to grow and grow and grow. So that helped, you know, that obviously helps with just confidence around that the brand has like long-term legs.
It's like being able to say, look, here's what can happen when you follow the system. We're having success over here. Come join the party. And ultimately, all but one ownership group bought into the changes, and the one that resisted sold to somebody else who was ready to buy in. It took about 6 months to fix everything, and then the company got back into expansion mode. And from there, Orange Theory was in far better shape and far more ready to become the kind of company that it is today. And let's just pause to acknowledge again how hard this was. 6 months of hitting pause and methodically fixing the business. 6 months of wondering if this thing they'd built was really made to scale. This is tough stuff. It's not supposed to be easy. But then again, that's what makes a scalable brand so scalable. It isn't just about being a great idea or perfectly timing it or perfectly on trend or whatever it is. It's about having a brand where you put in the hard work up front, where you lay the foundation for success, and then you go. And that's our episode. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to Problem Solvers wherever you get your podcasts. We come out with a new episode every Monday morning, and you don't want to miss it. And hey, be kind. Pass the show along to an entrepreneur friend who could use a boost. And did you solve a problem that would be good for this show? Let me know about it. Visit my website, jasonfeifer.com, JasonFeifer.com, where you can find my contact information and all sorts of other valuable info. Problem Solvers is a production of Entrepreneur Media. Be sure to visit entrepreneur.com for all your entrepreneurship needs. And even better, subscribe to our magazine, which is just full of the smartest entrepreneurs solving the toughest problems. My name is Jason Feifer, the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine. Thanks for listening. And hey, let's go solve some problems.